and welcome to this edition of The Bullpen. As always, I'm James Roy, and with me is Tom Chabria, and we're here to talk Texans playoff football. How's it going, Tom?
It's good. It's good. It's really good to be a Texan fan right now. Not so much to be a fan of any other Houston sports. Rockets took it on the chin tonight. I don't know how you beat the Thunder the way they play and the way they're allowed to play. And then, you know, there's just some news that you just broke that I didn't even know was a thing. If you're a baseball fan, you hate it. So I'll let you bury the lead there. But yeah.
Kyle Tucker has joined the Boys in Blue over there in L.A. No contract disclosure. And I think Tom hit the nail on the head when we talked about it before. Probably low years, high AAV deal. And, you know, because the Dodgers can do that because they deferred the largest contract in baseball for 10 years. So just not ideal. And I want to say that it's like hypocritical the Dodgers to sign him, but honestly, Tucker's like, was he even on the team when the scandal went down? I think he was on the 2019 team, but he wasn't up at the top in 18 or 17, as far as I remember.
No, but it won't matter. I mean, we've seen it, and I won't get too deep into it, but every Astro that leaves Houston, immediately it's like you're absolved. You know, no big deal. It's yeah, okay.
I felt that with like Bregman. Like, you know how like all last year media outlets are treating Bregman like he was this new thing that was like, oh wow, look at this, really one of the best defensive third basemen in baseball, and look, he can hit too. It's like, yeah, we know he's been in Houston all these years. You've been booing him every time he steps up to the plate. All of a sudden, all is forgiven. It's crazy. But like Bregman, Correa, you know, those guys, I would have felt a different way. It's not cool. I don't like seeing Tucker go to LA, but I don't view LA as like hypocritical for taking him. I just, my frustration with that signing is that they basically have unlimited money and they're getting the best talent on the market is what it comes down to. Speaking of the best talent on the market, let's talk about this Texans team going into New England. I'm excited for this matchup. I feel really good about it going into it, and I like to pick a stat going into each week that makes me feel good about the matchup. And one, I think it was Seth Payne put it out, that is my stat this week, is this Patriots offense, number two in the league, has faced zero top 10 defenses. The Texans defense, number two in the league because of what went down in week 18 in terms of scoring is what we're going based off of, has faced eight top 10 scoring offenses. So battle tested, battle ready. If only they were wearing battle red, then I could say battle red E. But you know, battle tested, battle ready against a team that has looked really good against. I mean, the whole thing with the Patriots this season has been they've not really faced a whole lot of competition. So I want your take on that to start with. How do you feel going into this matchup with that stat as context?
I felt better about it before I heard about the weather today. It's talking about being snowy and really, I feel like if anything, the Texans defense is probably, I don't want to say neutralized, but I think they lose a little bit if you make the game kind of one dimensional and it's now a snow game and it's just who can run the rock more because no one's going to throw the football. And now it's like, all right, you're losing your edges. You're losing, you know, obviously if you can stop the run, then, you know, you still may have, you know, the opportunity to exploit your strengths. I just feel like that's an advantage New England. It's the style they like to play. It's kind of what makes them, you know, the team that they've been over the last two decades or whatever. Now, Drake May is this amazing young kid who's slinging the ball all over the joint. I would have loved to see what the Texans defense would have done, you know, with that guy dropping back. I think the Chargers gave him fits. And if this was a normal weathered game, I think the Texans would give him fits. And now I wonder if this changes the style of the game to just grind it out. Who can run the rock better? Who can complete the dink dunk short passes? And I think it kind of neutralizes the Texans defense a little bit.
to an extent, it neutralizes the Patriots offense, though, in a game where the big thing that you look at that Patriots offense is that, like, everyone's like, yeah, let's look at last week. Like, Aaron Rodgers is just, what, going to throw a bunch of screens and some short passes. The Texans will swarm to it and knock it out. Everyone's big thing going into this week, Drake May is a deep ball savant. He can throw the deep ball like no one else. And that's something that could mess with the Texans defense if he can get a guy behind him. He's got some pretty fast receivers. It's happened before to the Texans this season. Not a lot. They've not really been threatened by teams that can do that. But there have been some receivers who have made that work this season. And in a cold weather game where it's wind and snow, you know, as much as the Patriots will try and take that as a home field advantage, like, who is throwing a deep ball very well in that weather? The only quarterback I can think of in that game that I've seen and know for a fact can throw the deep ball in that weather is CJ Stroud, who in college played at Ohio State and had one of his best games in similar conditions. So, I mean, for me, the cold weather and the potential for snow usually would be a bit more impactful on the game. But the other part of it too is that look at the offensive identity the Texans want to establish and what they did last week, which is 112 rushing yards for Woody Marks. There's over 100 rushing yards for Woody Marks. They wanted to run the ball and they did that. And this is going to be a game where, with the weather the way it is, the New England will know that it's coming, but the Texans don't care. That's what they want to do in the game, to a fault sometimes. Sometimes I think that Kaylee has gotten better over the course of the season, but it's a known fact. He said it at the beginning of the season. The Texans offense wants to run the ball. And so now this is perfect weather for that. It's football weather. They're going to get to go out there and they're going to get to run the football.
So I love the deep ball savant thing. I wanted that. I invite that. I think when you saw Aaron Rodgers try to drop back and throw the ball deep, it's when the Texans got home. I want Drake May to do that. I think this eliminates that and makes it more of a short, you know, and I don't, this is not to say that the Texans defense can't thrive in that condition. I just think if we're talking about turnovers, if we're talking about, you know, big sacks, stuff like that, maybe you don't get that when the ball's coming out super quick because, you know, the conditions aren't favorable to try to do those things. We'll see. Hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully the weather's perfect.
Hopefully. I mean, either way, the high was projecting at 36. It's projecting like around freezing around that time. So it'll be interesting to see. Did you see, I can't remember if it was a reporter or if it was just a New England fan, but I think it was a reporter from one of the local radio stations. It's like, I can't believe I'm saying this. And he like pulls up a bunch of random stats on Derek Stingley and was like, we need to throw it at Derek Stingley.
Please listen to that guy.
Please do it.
Please. I want that so bad. I love when guys get cute. Like, you get these national media guys. You seen the tweet that's going around where the guy's like, oh no, that Texans pass rush is going to get to Aaron Rodgers. And it's like, he's been dealing with pass rushes his entire career. And then lo and behold, what happens? You know, then they cut it where they put in the plays where they got to him. And it's like, yes, but I want you to sleep on these guys. Please disrespect them. Did you see the, I can't remember his first name, the wide receiver, Booty
Kayshon or Boutte? Bell.
Yeah.
Or Booty. I don't know how you say it.
Where
the
he's
guy
like,
who tweeted that quote deleted the tweet afterwards. I was like, I wonder why you deleted that one.
It's
that
like
a beautiful quote.
I want this. Please. They need every motivation. And I take that back. I apologize. They don't need every motivation. They will gladly accept them, though. They will gladly accept them and go, oh, we need to prove ourselves again. We haven't done that yet. Absolutely. You know, I think Stephon Diggs is going to go, hey, fellas, I played those guys in practice. They're dogs.
Yeah.
Let's not stir up the brothers.
We got a few people in the chat on Instagram. So I'll go through that here. Give me a second. Wow. My mouse is not doing what I want it to do. Okay. Let's see. It says, how do you think the Texans will handle the Pats run game? They've got two solid running backs. I mean, I think, I'll go first. Ramondre Stevenson could look like CJ Stroud did against the Patriots or against the Steelers. Honestly, like, he's got a pretty big fumble problem. That's been his biggest knock pretty much since he's been in the league. And Henderson looks really good. I think it's a really good run tandem. I just think, like, I don't know if people talk about it enough, but like, Will Anderson Jr. is an excellent pass rusher. I think he's even better at stopping the run. Like, the way he gets down the line and breaks up run plays before they can start is crazy. And this, as Texans run defense has been, I mean, the Texans defense in general has been great, but like, I don't have any reason to believe, I think, especially with the weather, if it's like a snow game and it's, once again, like I said, on our side, we already state that we want to run the ball in a snow game. Their team's going to expect us to run the ball, and vice versa. This Texans defense is going to expect the Patriots to run the ball. So if they can see it coming, I mean, it's just going to be a matter of, is it slick out there? Are you going to have trouble sticking and moving? I mean, I don't want to say I'm not concerned, because it's the number two offense in the league. And I know earlier in the episode, I talked about like my stat that I'm hanging on to kind of try and invalidate that, but they produce. And until proven otherwise, it's the number two offense in the league. And, you know, we're number two defense. We got to go out there and prove that those points we gave up to the Colts are the only reason we're number two. So that's how I feel about it. How do you feel about it, Tom?
Like I said earlier, you know, the Chargers gave them fits. I believe there's another level that they got, that the defense goes up the Chargers to the Texans. So I imagine, much like they thought that, you know, the Steelers Texans game is going to be low scoring, I imagine this one to be low scoring too. The only thing that I'm uneasy about, like I said, if this becomes a snow game, you saw guys slipping around a little bit in Pittsburgh. I got to believe that that's going to happen again in New England if it's, you know, a blanket of snow all over the place. I just wish that it was not that way. Just because I know what they're capable of in normal conditions, it's just going to be tough when every play is critical. I mean, obviously if the defense has another game like it had last week and they go score two touchdowns, it won't matter. It just absolutely won't matter. If the defense gives you any points at all, it will not matter. Cause I think that's just really hard for another team to overcome. It's just, we saw CJ really struggle with handling problems. We saw him struggle with, like, I think really trying to overdo it. I think he doesn't want to be viewed as a game manager, and we can get into that, but it just felt like he forced a lot where he didn't have to. And I believe this game, it should be a great bounce back. But if things get south, he tends to, his body language gets bad, and I'm a little concerned for what the offense is going to do. I think they need to come out hot and really kind of establish things, which I wish that the weather was good. The weather is just going to change the game for me so much if it's a snow game. I
feel like we've switched roles here, because all season I was talking about how important the weather was and how it needed to be good. And now I'm kind of like, oh, snow could be in our favor. And you're like, I wish the weather was good. I don't think you're doubting the team in the snow. I just think it's interesting. It's not a 100% swap, but...
Well, no, you said they had to be the home team. I think
the home team because of the weather.
But you can't do that. I don't think they were going to be the one seed ever. I'll be very honest. Well,
they could still host the AFC Championship.
100%, and I'm rooting for 100%. It.
100%. I think that's higher, more likely than going to Denver.
I don't know. I don't want to sleep on Denver. Denver. If a Denver fan was watching the show, I'll be the first to say, hey, they won that game without, you know, CJ for half. But you got to respect, they're the one seed. They earned that. They earned that. Not the one seed I would have thought that would have been the one seed. Definitely not. But tip your cap.
One minute. So I texted my wife a picture of the breaking news when Kyle Tucker signed with the Dodgers, because in case you didn't know, newsflash, my wife is a Dodgers fan. And oh, she said, God. She just texted me. She said, is he still good? And then she said, are you switching teams?
No.
And I'm like, no. But I mean, and I'll say right now, not to take too much time away from football talk, but when he signed with the Cubs, I have a fantasy football dynasty group chat. One of the commissioners, a Cubs fan, and he asked me, how's Kyle Tucker? And I said, well, he's good, but like, he's going to give you the best baseball you've ever seen for like 100 games maybe, and the rest of the time you're going to be asking yourself where Kyle Tucker is, or he's going to be hurt. And he actually, the commissioner of that league, screenshotted that message exchange at the end of the season and said, wow, you actually predicted exactly what Kyle Tucker was to our team. And I was like, yeah, I mean, that's what it is. I love
Kyle Tucker. I had a front row seat.
When he's there, when he is playing and he is at his best, he is one of, if not the best in the league. But it's just a matter of if you're going to get that.
I've been refreshing Twitter while we've been talking because I'm dying to know what they paid him. Are you ready? You want to guess at what they paid him? This is a source.
5 years, $360 million.
You'd be off by years and off by money, but probably not off by that much AAV. It's 4 years, $240 million.
Okay. Yeah. I'm a little high on the AAV, I think, with that, but
$60 million a year for Kyle Tucker.
That's insane.
Like, I get it. They can defer.
I almost said 5 years, $300 million. That would have been spot on AAV. I would have just added a year to the contract. Man, I should have. I doubted myself. I added an extra 60.
It's just ridiculous. Like, he's not worth that. He's barely worth half that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're doing the math, you know, like I said, 100 games, that's what, 2/3 of a season. So, yeah, I mean, realistically, maybe you could pay him what the Red Sox paid Alex Bregman last year. That'd be probably more worth it. Oh, and then also, I said that's why California's always out of money. Well, I thought he was saying this, but like honestly, he's gonna get the crap taxed out of his money out here too, because he's gonna play most of his games out here in California. So
they said there's an opt out after year two. Why would you opt out of that?
I don't know.
No one's giving you $60 million a year.
The contract you have with the Red Sox. And I mean, obviously he was a Cubs fan growing up and that was probably good for him, but money wise, like he did take a step back there. I don't know, but enough baseball talk. I'm glad that you've been refreshing so that we can get that number right now. Let's take a step back and let's look, because I think it's important to talk about what happened in the Pittsburgh game before we have some of the discussions that need to be had. You referenced CJ, so we'll start there. What are your thoughts on it? Without giving any context, I just want to know what you thought of his performance on Monday night.
Probably one of the worst performances he's had as a professional. And it wasn't so much like it wasn't his numbers, right? Like, it was how we looked. It was the decision-making. It was some of the things that, you know, you would expect from like a rookie quarterback that you're getting in year three. So he had issues with the snap, right? Shotgun, ball snap to him, can't get his hands on him. The camera guys did a really good job of panning into his eyes. He wasn't looking the ball in at all on like two of those fumbles. And it's like, I get it. You're worried about trying to scan the defense and figure out what's going on. But unless they come out later on and say, Jake Andrews was just snapping it whenever he thought he wanted to, instead of like when he was instructed to. That's on CJ. You have to see the ball in. You have to lock in there. Those are rookie mistakes. And it's not that he's not human. I totally understand that. Everybody's human. It's like, these are things that at playoff time, the good ones don't make those mistakes. The great ones never do. And now you kind of look at it and go, man, you know, and this is not to say that he won't be great. This is not to say that he can't go on from this and do great things. But it's like, okay, maybe he's got some more growing to do, and we want to put him in the upper echelon of quarterbacks, and maybe he's like middle of the pack right now. And that's okay. He's still incredibly young. I'm not saying that he can't mature. You see it and you just kind of sigh, because you're like, that's not something you would expect from a guy that we've talked about as being on the cusp of top three QBs in football. And now you kind of got to walk that back a little bit.
Yeah, it's a shame. I think the real thing that's kind of, because if CJ had a run-of-the-mill rookie season, we could view what he's doing right now as progress towards being great. But I think the biggest thing that affects the conversation around CJ is that his rookie season was what it was. But to talk about this performance particularly, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I may have jumbled up some of this, but five fumbles. He lost two of them. And the two that he lost were from the pass rush. They were not mistakes that he made. It wasn't a drop snap. The drop snaps were all recovered. That is my understanding of it. I think I'm mixing it up in my head, but either way, losing those fumbles, the way I look at it is like this, right? I agree with you. I think that you watch that performance and your first thought is this is probably the worst game that CJ Stroud has had just because of the turnovers. It's tough to look past that. If you look the Real app is the one that a lot of people shared the screenshot of. But if you look at stat sheets, if you look at box scores, if you're a box score watcher, that game looks really good because it's just one interception and the fumbles aren't presented prominently on it. But I think I agree with you. I think the fumbles and his body language and the way that he approached it were huge detriments to his game. But I personally think that I hate to be this way about it, but like if there was ever a game to do that in, it was the one they just played. And if there was ever an issue that CJ Stroud could have in a game that could make him look really bad, but that is very easily correctable, it is the handling of the football. And I think most Texans fans would agree with me when I say there's a point in each game where you kind of look at CJ and you go, hey, don't mess this up, kid. Just hang on to the football. Don't turn it over. And maybe try and convert a couple of first downs. Like, that's really all you have to do. And I know that you spoke to it. He doesn't want to be viewed as a game manager, but there's a point in every game where the defense is doing so well and you're up by enough that you literally just need to hang on to it. You need to do whatever you can to not turn the ball over. And like that interception, like I said, looking at the stat sheet, that interception is like, oh, just one pick, 251 yards, one touchdown, one pick. Not even that bad. But if you watched that play, it was a desperation throw. It was the ugliest thing I've ever seen. And there's no professional quarterback that should be attempting that pass. It was all CJ and it was awful. It was not good. So I think for me, I understand both sides of it. This was probably CJ Stroud's worst performance, but I think overall he had a good game passing outside of that one play. And I think that overall you can look at what he did wrong and you can go, oh, we can fix that. We can work that out. That's like this game thing. His mentality. I don't know if you ever played like Guitar Hero. That's what I always look at. I like to think I was pretty good at Guitar Hero in my younger days. I get on expert, and you'd be playing.
Your younger
you
hadn't days.
Missed a note. You hadn't missed a note yet, and you're playing. And the second you miss a note, then you're missing two, and then three, and then four. It's like it compounds. The mental toll of a mistake is tough to overcome. And I think CJ throughout his career has done it a pretty okay job of usually being kind of, you know, okay, that was in the past, I'm moving on. But in this game, it felt like as each mistake happened, it just compounded and compounded, and he couldn't mentally move past it. And so for me, I think you can fix that. I think that's like, it's not like a crockpot thing. That's a microwave thing, to go off of CJ Stroud's analogies for the offense. I think you can go, okay, CJ, that was a rough game. You can't do that in New England, so just don't do that. And I think it'll go a lot better. If those signs show up in New England, I don't want to say it's over because I think the defense can overcome just – I think that in Pittsburgh, the defense proved it can overcome just about anything the offense throws at it, like at that point. That's, I think, the biggest positive takeaway. But overall, I think what CJ did, it was probably his worst performance, but I think it can be overcome. And I think that his mistakes – are not things that make me think, oh, this is going to follow him throughout the playoffs.
I don't know. There was more than just the one interception for me. And I totally feel like he can bounce back this week and you can forget all about that. What's concerning to me is there's some little things that have been kind of off all season. And we want to immediately go, well, we saw him do it at the highest level, and we want to lean on the rookie season. We even want to lean on last year a little bit because there were still some plays that he made. And again, I feel like sometimes off script for him is better than on script. You see him make some of the best off script plays, and sometimes the stuff that should be simple on script looks bad. But to go back to this game, you could make an argument that Nico Collins' injury had a little to do with a couple of the throws that CJ made that were not accurate, that had him sticking his neck out into some traffic to make catches. And then there were throws that he missed that we're not accustomed to seeing missing. And it's those little things that make you wonder, okay, one time, cool. Two times, third, fourth time, then you're like, this is starting to be a consistent thing. And I really hope these are nerves. This is the expectations that he's trying to live up to, because this team looks like locked, stocked to go as far as they want to go, as a lot of people have said. And you've got to believe at some point CJ is going, man, I can't screw this up. And he's feeling it, because some of these things that are happening, they just don't look right to your eye. Like, why would, like, we talk about the interception. Why on earth would you throw that ball? It was behind. It was late. It was everything they tell you not to do. And if he's not forcing that action, what is it? Because I feel like that's exactly what it is. And the only thing that makes you really do that is I have to do my part.
Yeah, and I agree. I have the comments up here from JJ Sugar. It's a really long comment. I'm not going to read it, but I have it up on the screen. I agree with the sentiment behind that. But what I will say is this, and it's my last line on this before we kind of move into the next topic. The comparisons this Texans defense get, 07 Giants, 2000 Ravens, you know, you go down the list. The 2000 Ravens won the Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer at quarterback. I don't like making the comparison, but they did it with Trent Dilfer at quarterback. And that, to me, is enough. And I think that CJ can be as good, if not better, than what Trent Dilfer was for that Ravens team. And I think the biggest thing is Woody Marks stepping up and showing up against the Steelers. I think if we can see him consistently do that, that will be a big part of it too. But I do agree with JJ Sugar. The Texans offense and CJ need to do their part. It's not going to be all defense. There is some amount of points that are going to need to be scored. But speaking of the offense, and you kind of alluded to it earlier, so obviously Nico Collins is injured. I was going to say it probably okay since Christian Gonzalez is injured, but it turns out he is in a different concussion protocol than Nico Collins. I think Brandon Halam commented earlier on the stream, it's like, need to get Cal on the same level as Robert Kraft, show him the ways of circumventing that. Full disclaimer, I want Nico to be healthy. I'm not trying to force him onto the field sooner than he needs to be. It's just a joke, guys. So here's what I want to open with is Nico Collins is injured. I want to know how you feel about his potential, really large potential absence in this game.
I want to be clear. In a perfect world, Nico Collins suits up. That's the way. Like, I get these people, you see people on social media that are like, well, the Texans offense is going to be better now because Nico's not in it. And that's just wrong. Like, I get it. CJ moves the ball around a little bit better because the first read isn't Nico Collins. And I would fall in love with throwing to Nico Collins too. He beats a lot of really good corners, and he makes your life easier because he's a big target, runs great routes, and makes up, you know, for bad throws from time to time. So now that you don't have that, you've got all these other guys that are good wide receivers too. I really believe that Nick Cassero did a great job of preparing this team for the event of a possible injury to a wide receiver. There's a lot of depth. Braxton Berrios has been a healthy scratch for a long time. That's a guy that can come in and make plays. Christian Kirk, for all the noise all season long about how Nick Caserio wasted the money and wasted the trade to get that guy in here, looked pretty damn good last week. So you're going to have that guy, two really good young dudes in Noel and Higgins, and then Xavier Hutchinson is just, you know, the quiet workman-like dude who can come in and play and be really good too. So there's enough there in the wide receiver room to overcome Nico being out. You really hope it's just the 1 week, though. My fear is that it's something closer to what CJ had. CJ missed 3 weeks, and then you do the math, that puts him out for basically, you know, the Super Bowl, if nothing else, you know?
I mean, I think with the Pro Bowl, he'd have time to get back into shape and be ready for the Super Bowl. But I mean, I want to preface my response by saying, because you just literally said, like, some people will say this team does better without Nico. And I need to preface it by saying Nico Collins is a very vital part of this room. His chemistry with CJ Stroud is very important. He is bar none the best wide receiver on this team. And I think I'm speaking from more of a hopeful slash somewhat historical viewpoint on this, but I think that I don't want to say that Nico being out is beneficial because I don't feel that way about it, but we have empirical evidence in games where Nico has missed this season with this wide receiver room, with the depth that we have, where CJ, and we had this discussion earlier in the season, and I took this viewpoint then, which is that the potential of Nico not being in there, giving CJ the ability to distribute the ball more, feel like he's not stuck on a read, and being able to work through reads with the understanding that he just needs to get to whoever's open because it's not Nico, and Nico's not going to just grab the ball out of the defender's hands. Like, he needs to find the best target based off of scheme and who's open. I think could be beneficial, especially in a snow game. Imagine CJ dropping back and just says, screw it, Nico's out there somewhere in the snow. Would not be a good game plan. And I think that we've seen CJ perform particularly well in games where Nico's not there, because there's not a pressure. I don't feel like he feels pressured. I think he feels like Nico is like more of like a pacifier, I guess I would say, like a comfort thing, where he's like, I got to go to Nico because I know that I can trust him to make the catch, which is true. Nico is a really good wide receiver, and that's a very valid reason to stick with him as your target. But I do think that Nico being out could be beneficial, like I said, from the standpoint of maybe seeing better ball distribution and a little more schematic reliance, where he's relying on guys to be schemed open instead of going, okay, Nico's my first read, he's probably open. And that's not to say that that's what was happening, but obviously, like I said earlier this season, we did see a game where Nico was out, a couple games, and we saw the depth step up and the ball distribution look very good in those games. So I think that I don't want to say that Nico won't be missed, but I do think that there's this potential of the team to still look good without him. So I want to be careful how I say that. I don't want to add another player slash Texans person to my list of people I owe an apology to. For those keeping track, you know, Dalton Schultz, Jalen Petrie. I think Christian Kirk, let's talk about Christian Kirk, because I think he's adding his name to the list. I've spoken pretty harshly about the addition of him to the roster with his lack of production. And I'll put it in the same category as Dalton Schultz. It was warranted. There was a very long stretch that warranted that discussion, where Christian Kirk was quite literally just, I was wondering why he was playing like the seventh round pick that was traded for him to be here. But he stepped up in a big way, and I think that's another point that makes me feel a little bit better about the high potential of Nico Collins not playing. His road to clear concussion protocol at this point makes me comfortable saying that it's unlikely that he plays this week. And so I think that the Texans, and here's another person from my list, Nick Caserio, that I am on my apology tour for, but drafting Jalen Knoll and Jaden Higgins in the same draft is looking like a much better move with that. And the Texans have had problems where they enter the playoffs with poor wide receiver depth, with Tank Dell or Nico Collins or some combination of wide receivers out. Tank Dell hadn't taken a snap in the playoffs. And it's been a problem where you're relying on guys like Jared Wayne to catch balls. And that's not the case anymore. You brought it up. Braxton Berrios has been a healthy scratch. That's someone who will likely see some play time. And I look at that room and I feel a lot better about it than I have in the past with the injuries that the Texans have suffered at that position. But how do you feel? Let's look at Christian Kirk's performance. What do you have to say about that?
Well, real quick, before we get to this, I have a story real quick. And it's just the craziness of where some Texan fans live. And I snuck into, I just kind of stepped in towards the end of Houston Stressin's podcast last night. And this topic was brought up. You know, what do the Texans do? And Stressin's went in, you know, as Stressin's does, about depth is there, they'll be good. So something comes across the thing. You know, the Texans are undefeated without Nico. With CJ's contract coming up and Will Anderson's contract coming up, why don't the Texans just trade Nico? That way they'll have the extra money to be able to pay these guys. And it's like,
he's like, a lot of money to Nico for his services.
Exactly. I was like, I comment. I was like, that's one of the best wide receiver contracts in the NFL. There's no reason you trade that. And there would be a line of people out the door waiting for you if you're like, oh yeah, Nico Collins is available.
Did that person also say that because we're undefeated with Davis Mills this season, that we should just not re-sign CJ Stroud and put Davis Mills in? I hate, like, on social media, like, I
empirical say, evidence, though.
I'll say what I'm thinking. And during the Steelers game, I said, you know, I put out a tweet that was like, this, the only thing that can stop this Texans team is the Texans offense. And then after somewhere at the start or like into the second half, I elaborated and said, you know, CJ Stroud is single-handedly trying to lose this game. And the whole comment section, like, I was like, it was a very, I mean, it was something that was accurate, but I hate tweeting things like that. And in the moment I was like, I have to say it, like, it is very obviously happening. But then you look in the whole reply section, it's like, well, you know, what about Davis Mills? Maybe we could put I'm like, no, there is not a universe outside of injury where I'm looking to put Davis Mills in over CJ Stroud. But I think CJ needs to figure it out. He needs to get something going, because he was literally trying to lose that game for the Texans. But yeah, so I think it's crazy seeing how fans react to things. And, you know, as a fan who has overreacted at times, I don't know if I've ever overreacted that bad, but the night is young.
I mean, for me, I always try to be on the level, you know, like I try to see both sides, and I feel like if I can see both sides, then I can at least go, okay, I understand why. And then I'll rationalize a little bit better, instead of just going, player X is terrible, this guy has always been terrible, strap him to a rocket and shoot him to the moon. Now, don't get me wrong, come, you know, baseball season, I feel like there are players that play for, you know, the Astros, my team. I feel that way. And I feel like I have enough to back it up. With football, I believe, like, it's so difficult. You have so many things are going on. You need so many things to go right. I tend to want to dig into it a little bit more. So for CJ, me and my dad, we go back and forth. He's calling me like 11 billion times during the game. Every big play, I'm getting a phone call, you know, and I told him I was with you. I was like, look, this isn't the offensive coordinator. This isn't the offensive line. This isn't the tight end. This isn't the running. This is seven. Seven is the problem right now, and seven alone. And if seven can get his S together, then we'll be fine. If seven cannot, then I don't know. Because we'll at be that time,
plane tickets to Cancun, dude.
Yeah, because at that time it was 7-6. And it's like, look, seven points may be enough. But if seven could go get seven more, I'd feel a hell of a lot better. And it looked like it wasn't going to happen. And finally, you know, they got it going and got what they needed, and, you know, everybody's happy, but the self-inflicted wounds were just so tough to watch. We really feel like this guy's not that dude. There are quarterbacks out there that you see and you go, you kind of expect it a little bit, whether it be youth or whether it be, you know, I just don't have it. You know, Sam Darnold. I'm talking about you, maybe. I didn't expect that game from CJ Stroud.
The biggest thing that's frustrating about it is that when, like, obviously we've talked about the impact of CJ Stroud's rookie season on how he's perceived. The number one thing, like, people will talk about the other things he did or how explosive the offense was his rookie season, but the number one thing to me that's a glaring difference is that in his rookie season, he threw five interceptions. And then since then, he has topped 10 in each season that he's played. And it's just a wonder, like, one of his biggest strengths was taking care of the football and not turning it over. And for that to falter now is probably the worst possible time, considering the defense they have. Because rookie season, I think that hanging on to the football was important because the defense was still working it out. It was good defense, but it wasn't like at the level that this defense is. But now that you're at this level as a defense, literally all you need from your quarterback is just don't turn the ball over. And I mean, you could talk all about how that affects things. So I look back at, I believe it was either the 2009 or 2010. What year did the Packers win the Super Bowl? Their defense didn't even rank super highly in a lot of categories, but they forced so many turnovers that they basically said, you know, Aaron Rodgers is a good quarterback. Back then, he's a really good quarterback. You know, we're just going to put the ball in his hands so many times that it's impossible for us to lose. And at this point, we're not even asking the defense to put the ball in CJ Stroud's hands. We're just asking CJ to not put it in the other team's hands too many times. That's like, I don't think that's a big ask in the grander scheme of things. But looking at this matchup, going back to the New England matchup, a big talking point this week has been that Darrell Taylor, a backup edge on the team, was released. The Patriots picked him up. And a lot of people are like, oh, he's going to give the team secrets away. How do you feel about that discussion that's being had this week?
I think it's not a discussion, not a topic. I think teams do that all the time. I don't think you're going to learn anything from Darrell Taylor that you can't find on the film. The Texans don't scheme anything crazy. They basically show you what they're going to do and dare you to figure it out. You know, the broadcast on the Monday night game was basically saying that the entire game. You know, the Texans get incredible pressure with four guys. They're not doing anything exotic. They're not, you know, disguising blitzes. They're coming at you with a base defense and saying our 11's better than your 11. So I don't know what this talking point is, that this guy that didn't see the field a ton is all of a sudden going to be able to just go up there and whiteboard some stuff out, that they're just going to be able to, oh, you know what? You're right. That's the magic formula to figuring out the Texans defense. It's not going to happen.
The most exotic thing they did last week was, I don't know if you saw it. It's like Film Analysis One. I don't know the exact handle, but this guy literally just watches film, and it's probably one of the best follows that I've picked up recently on Twitter. He puts out some. I'll send you his handle, but he was breaking it down. The Texans later in the game, on late downs, would stack three defensive linemen on one side of the line, and then they would put Will Anderson or Danielle Hunter out on an island by themselves. And what it would do is it would force the whole, left guard all the way through to right tackle would be forced to slide over to cover. And then what it did was it left the other edge alone on an island. And there was like two or three of the sacks where, like, because they set up the front four that way, it forced the O-line to adjust in a way where they literally just got one-on-one. If you put either one of our edges one-on-one with any tackle, it's 50-50 at worst if they're going to get through. That's a tough rep. And so I'll send you the handle for that guy, but that was a good thing. And then he even pointed out, like, at one point, once the Steelers got wise to it, what they did was they'd line up that way and then they'd run a stunt with the defensive tackles. And the play where Sheldon Rankins picks up the fumble, they ran that stunt and, or no, it was not a different play. The Danico Autry batted ball was one where they ran that stunt and Danico Autry got a free run at the quarterback and batted the ball down. I'll send you the video so that you can follow the account. But yeah, I mean, the Texans are not really trying to hide anything from you. They're playing smart football, but defensively they're lining it up and let's see what happens is the general philosophy. So I agree with you, pretty much a non-story. And even in the reporting, like, Darrell Taylor's been asked by reporters about that. And he expressed that there was interest from New England in Darrell Taylor in the offseason when the Texans got him. So that is not like a, oh no, let's try and get some intel kind of thing, at least not entirely. Let's see, we've got a comment here. Am I alone in thinking that CJ rebounds from last game? No, I don't think you are. I agree with that sentiment. I know Tom does too. I think that's the general sentiment amongst Texans fans. It's pretty widespread. Keeping on the New England theme, obviously we haven't talked about this, but there is a certain player on the New England offense who was on the Texans offense last season, Stephon Diggs. How do you feel about how he stacks up to the Texans defense? What do you think he brings to that New England offense? Is there anything that concerns you about that?
I don't know if the concern is the right word. I do believe that, you know, they lined up in practice a ton. I do believe that the defense knows Stephon. I believe that Stephon has an idea of what the defense is. I'm not going to say that they lock him up. I think he'll figure out. He's crafty. He's a vet. I think he'll figure out a way to make a couple plays. But I do feel like there are going to be some plays where they exploit what they know about him. Sorry.
Take your time. You got it. You got it. I mean, I agree with you. And they asked Stephon directly. They were like, do you keep in touch with any of the players from the Texans? And he said, you know, Tank and CJ are his boys. So Tank's not seen the field in a year. And CJ, I don't know what he's going to tell Stephon Diggs that's going to help the Patriots. I think they just talk. They're just friends. You know, I wouldn't put anything on that. As far as Stephon Diggs' skill level, I mean, he's been a contributor to that team. One of the big part reasons why Drake May has had the season that he had. I don't think it necessarily makes me too worried on the defensive end of things. As far as, you know, he's not like the same player that like 5 years ago I'd have been like, Stephon Diggs is the guy to watch. Stingley needs to lock him up. It's not necessarily where I'm at right now. But here, if you want to continue your thought, I know you were
having a little bit. Yeah, sorry. I was like choked up. I got a scratch or something. Anyway, I do believe that this is a game where Stephon Diggs is going to be counted on, because if they are going to throw the football, I think it's going to be that short intermediate stuff, outbreaking routes, stuff like that. And I really think that the way they use him the best is a chain mover, you know, the intermediate guy. I think Booty or Boutte or however you say his name is their deep threat guy. So that's where I see him fitting in. It'll be interesting to see which side of the field he lines up on. If they try to line him up on Kamari, if they try to line him up on Stingley, that'll be interesting. Just to see. I know the Texans don't shadow. They don't follow. So it'll be more about where New England puts him and which matchup they want to try to exploit. I welcome them trying to go at Stingley with Diggs. That'd be interesting.
I think he'll end up playing more on Petrie, more in the slot. So be interesting to see how that shakes out. Let's see. Kirk has to be the man on Sunday. By the way, before we give our score predictions, I don't want to delve into this too much, but I thought it was the funniest thing. Stephen A. Smith had a little slip up when talking about Christian Kirk's performance.
You almost did it.
I almost did it right there because I just thought it was hilarious. So I guess for this game this Sunday, we are Christian Kirk. I don't know. How did you feel about that comparison? I thought it was weird. I don't even know what to say about it. It's crazy.
For me, how do you get there? That's the thing. Like, where was your head?
C-Kirk. Like, come on.
Like, where was your headspace to even think Charlie?
He was thinking about his political campaign. That's what he was thinking about.
I guess, man. Like, when I saw that, I was like, of all the C names, it wasn't Chris. If you would have said Chris Kirk, I would have understood, you know, like Charlie. I don't know. It was just awkward. To answer, Brent, I think that, the offense should be able to move the football. I don't think that their defense is any worse than Pittsburgh was. Pittsburgh had a really good defense. TJ Watt, ex defensive player of the year. So I think that they should be able to move the football. Can they protect it? Can they kick field goals? That's going to be the question.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that New England's defense is good. It's always going to be good because Mike Vrabel is the coach. And I think before we give score predictions, my last real talking point on the Patriots and what I'm concerned about with them is that Mike Vrabel is their coach. I think that as Texans fans, we know good and well that coaching makes a difference. I mean, D'Amico Ryans, what he's been to this team has been huge. And so I think that at the end of the day, the Texans offense is going to be in for a challenge because, you know, Mike Vrabel is over there on the other sideline. As far as specific talent, I mean, I don't have anyone in specific outside of Christian Gonzalez who I was hopeful. I don't wish injury on anyone, but he already had a concussion and I was kind of hopeful because Nico got one as well, that maybe they would both miss this week. or both play, and it's looking like it's just going to be Christian Gonzalez that's going to play because Robert Kraft knows how to get around the concussion protocol. I can't recall the last time a player was injured the game before and made it to the next game in this concussion protocol that we're in right now. But it's the playoffs. They need explosive football, so I guess they'll do what they do. But looking at the Instagram chat, we have a few people that says, y'all think we're winning on Sunday. Heard there's so supposed to be snow. We're about to get into that. We're about to give our score predictions right now. So you'll know here in a minute. Someone said, snow game means defensive game. I like our odds. I agree with you on that one. And then Angel Gar 713 says, Stevenson as Stephen A. Smith knew what he was doing, but we can't talk about that. Let's keep positive momentum. CJ needs to get it together. Too many snaps dropped by CJ. So yeah, I agree with that sentiment. With that, let's get into our score predictions. Tom, I'm dying to know how you feel this one's going to go.
Well, because of the snow, because I can't see Drake May throwing the ball all over the yard, I think it's going to be very low scoring. So for me, I it's hard for me to give New England more than 6 points. I know number two scoring offense. I know all the things. It's just if I feel like the snow is going to impact the Texans offense, I have to feel it's going to impact the New England offense. And if you make a team one-dimensional against that Texan defense, good luck. So 17-6 Texans is what I think.
It's a bold prediction. I'm in a state of crisis right now trying to determine how I'm going to score this because with snow and with the potential for that, like I don't know if I can give Fairbairn two field goals. I don't know if field goals will be an option, honestly. I have half a mind to give it a touchdown-based score prediction. But
I was just going to change mine to 16 for that reason. 16.
For that reason, yeah.
3 for Kaimi.
Man, I'm going to go with this. I'm going to go with a very old-school score. It's going to be reminiscent of a very sad time for you if you're a Texas fan. But I'm going to go with 14-7. I'm going to take the Texans. I think that it's going to be touchdown-based scoring. I'd love to be wrong because Kaimi Fairbairn is our best weapon. I don't know if you saw the early betting on Super Bowl MVP. Kaimi Fairbairn has like plus 50,000 odds to win that award. But because he's still an option, he has been the most bet player to be the Super Bowl MVP. And it's for good reason. I mean, he's probably the best kicker available. Angel Gar said 13-7. I considered that. I like that score prediction too, but I wanted to go low with the potential of snow. And I think that it's going to be a thing where you're going to have teams that would normally be like at the 30-yard line and they'd be like, okay, send out the kicking unit. And they're like, maybe we should not do that. And we should just go for it on like longer downs, like not long, but like, you know, 4th and 4, 4th and 5, you're like, I like our odds better going for it here than I do kicking the field goal. I don't know how windy or blizzardy the weather is going to be, but yeah, so that's it for me. As far as the storybook ending goes, let's look at it. It'd be 7-7 with 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and the Texans will have the ball. And not like the most eventful storybook ending. Defense is going to be what ends it. But 5 minutes left, they're set up at their own 40. CJ hands the ball up the middle to Woody Marks. Woody Marks just breaks away, just like a huge flaw in the Patriots defense. He just takes off up the middle and runs it for a 60-yard touchdown run. The Texans tack on the extra point, go up 14-7. And then the teams go back and forth throughout the rest of the game. Texans defense shuts down the Patriots offense, and the game ends 14-7. Not the way I think Tom wanted to see it. Doesn't like my cardiac endings, but we're watching the cardiac kids, so I have confidence that it'll probably go close to that.
Mine's the other way around. I guess I should have explained it.
Oh, okay. Here, explain it. You got it.
So I feel like the Texans get the ball first. CJ absolutely, determined to make amends, leads a 80-yard drive, mixing, matching, dunking, dipping, run game, everything, 7-0, right? Defense does their thing. New England can do very little. And then from then on out, it's a field goal kicking contest. Texans kick a field goal right before half, go up 10-3. New England comes out, kicks field goal, field goal, field goal, field goal. And I believe that the run game is going to be able to really move the football a lot. It's just that once they get into the red zone, trying to throw the ball is going to be really difficult. Gerard Jordan practicing, I think that's interesting. You know, what happens? Does he get some reps if he's healthy? I think Nick Chubb looked really good. That's a guy that if he's got any juice left in the tank, now's the time to get it because I don't see him being a Texan next year. So I would definitely try to maximize whatever this is for him and for the Texans, right? He's probably looking for another job. So I think that this is a game where they could run the ball for like 150 total yards and do just enough scoring, and then the defense do its job.
Yeah, I feel you on that. I think that either way, we're and I'd like to say this, like there's a potential for snow and wind flurries. I do not know how serious the wind or snow is going to be. Like if it's going to be a blizzard snowstorm, like it affects everything. Whereas if it's just like a light snow and cold weather, it could be a very different ball game. Either way, I mean, with any amount of snow, there's some slickness or whatever, but I'm not fully sure what to expect, but I've given it my best go. I strayed away from my 20-17 score prediction. So watch that be what happens. The Texans 20, Patriots 17. But yeah, with that, Tom, do you have any final thoughts before we kind of bring this thing to a close?
I'm looking up weather. So this says generally light winds from the west southwest from 5 to 10 miles an hour, with potential gusts up to 15, mid 30s temps, which I don't care about the temperature. The temperature doesn't seem like it's an issue. I think it was 30-ish weather in Pittsburgh, not a problem. But if it's a chance of snow showers, snow flurries, if it's going to be light, then it won't matter. And then my score is probably out the window, because I believe like the ball's going to go back and forth a little bit. I think it's a higher scoring game if it's not as snowy. And hopefully, you know, 23-10 Texans, Brent, I love that score. Hopefully we're talking about another 36 game where, you know, we're high-stepping to a AFC championship game, potentially in our building, which would be awesome. James Roy, first-class flight down here to see it.
We'll know because the Bills and Broncos play on Saturday, so we'll know going into it what we're playing for. I'll tell you, if a home playoff game had enough motivation to go out there and get a win, I don't know what is. I mean, that would be huge. Granted, I think I'm going to try and go to San Francisco if they can make it there. But if they make it to the AFC Championship, there's part of me that really wants to try and get out there and catch that historic moment. We're going to host the Bills, is what Brent says. I like that. I mean, I feel free on that. I felt very strongly that the Bills could beat the Jaguars. I think the Bills, let's look at it this way. And these are my final thoughts here. Texans, Patriots, it's going to be a good game. Bills, the only team that can make, or the only teams in the playoffs that can make Josh Allen less than Josh Allen are the 49ers and the Texans. And those two teams are not the one they're playing this week. So I feel pretty good about the Bills going into Denver. And I'd love to see them win it. And I'd love to see us go to our first AFC Championship game in the coming weeks. But with that, thank you for tuning in to this edition of The Bullpen. I've been James Roy, and with me has been Tom Chavarria. You can find us on social media. I'm at James Roy NFL, wherever you get your social media. Tom is Third Coast Tom on Twitter and TCTom1 on Instagram. And we are The Bullpen, the number one veteran-run Texans podcast in the entire universe. So make sure you're following along. You got us for at least one more week. We'll be going live I think we're at this point, we've pretty firmly established Thursday to talk about the game before and talk about the next game. So here's to talking about that next game next week. As always, thank you for watching. Stay classy, Houston, and vamos Texans.
Thanks for tuning in to The Bullpen, a Texans podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, and follow along for more Texans talk from The Bullpen.
Football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-FOR Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Assisted customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.